Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
12 voices in 12 hours. This is a special community discussion on opioid prevention on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Good afternoon. Brian Mazurowski back with you here. 12 Voices in 12 Hours continues on WBEN. And I'm sitting in studio with Dr. Gail Burstein, Erie County's health commissioner, of course, talking all day long about the opioid epidemic, not only in Erie County, but all across Western New York. And it will culminate in a forum at Tonawanda High School that will happen later tonight, 6 o'clock. You can hear it right here on WBEN. Gail, thanks so much for coming in studio, taking the time to join us today.
Sure. Thanks for inviting me. What number am I?
You are, we're halfway there, halfway through the list of six. So we're kind of moving along here.
Okay.
And we've covered a lot already, but people are tuning in, tuning out all the time. So don't worry if you repeat something that you might have heard. I wanted to get started with you talking a little bit about something we've seen in Erie County, something you talked about a little bit earlier this year, and that is a number of deaths due to overdoses declining, which is maybe not something that you would have expected looking back at this time last year when things were on the rise so much. How much of a change does that signal to you that we're actually having here in Erie County and Western New York, that we're seeing that number drop? What does that tell you?
Well, of course, the opioid-related overdose deaths are just the tip of the iceberg of the problem. I mean, that's, you know, the unfortunate consequence that we're all trying to avoid. The good news is that we have been decreasing in our numbers of opioid-related overdose deaths in 2017. And so we know we are going to have, when, you know, everything is all confirmed, a lower number in 2017 than we did in 2016. And it may even be, you know, similar or even lower than the numbers of 2015 when we have everything all confirmed. So that's very good news. And our medical examiner's office has also told me that that trend has continued in 2018. Of course, there are occasional blimps where we see some of, you know, very potent drugs on the market, and those are our blips. I mean, we have somewhere in the range of 110 suspected overdose deaths so far this year. And then at the same time last year, there were somewhere in the range of about 140. So we are definitely trending down in 2018, even compared to 2017. And we have other data to support that we are seeing a decline in our general opioid problem. I mean, first of all, in Erie County, we have access to look at our Medicaid data. So we can look at the number of different categories of prescriptions that are filled by Erie County residents that use Medicaid insurance. And we've seen a significant decline in the number of opioid prescriptions that are being filled. For example, hydrocodone has forever been number one prescribed drug and filled in Erie County. And in the past year and a half, it's dropped to number five. You know, also looking at buprenorphine, which is medication-assisted treatment to treat people struggling with opioid addiction, those number of prescriptions have increased. So we know that more people are getting into treatment. We have more treatment agencies. We have more healthcare providers that are prescribing buprenorphine. We have more methadone clinics opening up. So we're heading in a positive direction. I mean, still one overdose death is too many. And so this definitely, that is our end goal, is to try to prevent these deaths. And I think that looking at our indicators and our number of deaths, we're heading in the right direction.
Talking about that number of deaths, do you believe that that's because there's maybe more awareness, that maybe more or fewer people are taking these drugs, or is it because of something like naloxone that's being widely spread now, so many people being trained with that?
All of the above. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't really have any data that can tease out which program was the game changer. I think it's really the combination of our community coming together and creating unusual bedfellows. For example, public health has never been chummy with law enforcement. And now we are working hand in hand in various projects with a common goal of preventing overdose deaths. More people are healthcare providers are prescribing less narcotic pain medication. People are aware about the risks of these and taking less. We have most of our first responders are trained to recognize an opioid overdose and carry naloxone with them to save lives. So we have, you know, so many people working together in our community that have come together to address this problem. And I think it's just a culmination of all the efforts of so many people working so hard on this problem that are really, you know, changing our numbers. And that's very different than the surrounding areas of New York State. It's very different than our surrounding states. I mean, we really stand out in Western New York, and we have to attribute it to all the hard work of our community and our leadership of our county executive.
Well, we stood out originally because Erie County, Western New York, was kind of one of these areas talking nationally that was really hit hard by this. I talked with health experts thinking now 5-6 years ago who said that at national conferences, people would say, oh, wow, you know, you're from Western New York, you're from Erie County. That's, you know, kind of opioid ground zero with heroin and some of these other things. How did we get to that point to where we needed this massive response?
Well, First of all, I'm very skeptical that other areas were not facing the same problem. Our medical examiner office has been very diligent, especially with our toxicology lab, into identifying all the
she thinks maybe opioid. More awareness of it.
Well, also, and better reporting. I mean, we're not afraid to talk about problems that we have if it means that the raising awareness and preventing deaths. And we have been very forthcoming of aggressively investigating all possible overdose deaths and then reporting those numbers, those data, so that everybody's aware of the problem that we're having. We're not sticking our hands in the sand and running away from the problem. I mean, we have been very vocal about it because, I mean, we know that to address any type of public health problem, I mean, the first task is to identify the problem. I mean, you know, measure the magnitude, try to identify who is at risk, identify like the key factors that are contributing to it. And as soon as we realized that at the end of 2015 that we had a problem because we were doubling the number of overdose deaths compared to 2014, we started aggressively working on this problem with Mark Poloncarz creating a task force in the very beginning of 2016. And we hit the ground running, bringing everybody in the community together to work on this problem, whereas other communities are maybe just starting to realize that they have a problem and starting to work on it. Also, I mean, we are so fortunate that we have, I have to say, one of the best toxicology labs in the country. I mean, we've been the first labs to identify these different various fentanyl analogs that are killing people. And we have done a great job of documenting this problem where other health departments that may have medical examiner's offices may not have as robust toxicology labs or toxicology labs at all. And they have to send out to these tests, to these referral labs that charge a great deal of money to run those tests. And so they're very kind of discerning of who, you know, which tests they send out for what. And they don't have as good data. Also, most counties in New York State and the United States do not have access to a medical examiner. I mean, they don't have a medical examiner in their county. And so they, so most of the time, a coroner will determine the cause of death and for you know political reasons or because they know the family may not feel comfortable calling it an overdose death.
And for some of those people, that might not be something that's at the top of their mind to think
right,
is a big issue at the time.
Right. It might not be on their radar screen because, you know, common things are common. Mm-hmm. So they might think, oh, if they, you know, if they don't do an autopsy or toxicology lab test, they may think it's maybe one of the more, common causes of death.
You mentioned a lot about the county, different officials and health officials identifying this problem, and the fight now kind of turns to, as we've heard from a lot of people throughout the day, having other people identify the problem. Parents, people who are maybe a little more at the forefront of this, dealing with it firsthand. Speaking to parents right now, what are some of the things they should be keeping in mind as their kid turns, you know, 11, 12, starts to get into that age where you're entering, whether it's a school or maybe a group of friends, where they're going to face this at some point or another?
Right. Well, as a pediatrician and as a parent myself, I can say that there's really, you can start discussing these sensitive issues at a very young age. I mean, you just have to make sure you can provide age-appropriate messaging so that kids can understand at their, you know, at their level of development. And so at a very young age, you can start talking about the dangers of drugs and being careful about you know, what they take and even tobacco or alcohol, the very dangerous effects they can have on your body and on your school performance. And you can start giving those messages, you know, very simply at a very young age. And then also, as your child grows and becomes more sophisticated and their social network changes, you can have more sophisticated dialogue about it.
Do you think that conversation might need to change, that we're maybe dealing with a different animal at this time around? Because we're used to having that, you know, talk about alcohol, drugs with kids, but maybe it needs to be a little bit different because this time we're talking about something that was maybe, say, originally a prescription given to them for something that a sprained ankle or getting your wisdom teeth taken out.
You bring up a great point. I mean, parents can be great advocates for their kids. If their child, say, has a sports injury or a tooth, you know, a dental procedure like a tooth extraction, and is offered a prescription for a narcotic pain medication, you can say no. I've done it before with my child's oral surgeon. He had to have an incisor pulled for braces, and they wanted to give us like a week's supply of Lortabs, and I said, and they didn't even have a discussion about ibuprofen, and so. I just said no. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't have to bring those drugs in your house. And you can talk to your kids that help them understand, just because it's a pill, it's a prescription medication, whether it's written for you or whether it's written for your friend and your friend wants to be, you know, as a favor, you give you some pills. It doesn't mean that it's safe, and just to be very careful what's in your body. I mean, kids are, at developmental stages in adolescence, you know, they're really interested in themselves and they're really interested in their bodies. And so you could say, use that opportunity and say, you know, you want to know exactly what's going in your body and should be really careful about taking any pills unless you know what it is. And, you know, I tell you that it's okay.
Our conversation with the Erie County Health Commissioner, Dr. Gail Burstein, will continue. 12 Voices in 12 hours here on WBEN. If you have a question, feel free to send us a text. 3930. We'll be taking your questions for the health commissioner via text message throughout the next hour. Dr. Gail Burstein in with us till 1 o'clock. WBEN News Time, 1220. 12 Voices in 12 hours on WBEN. Brian Masurowski here with you, with Erie County's health commissioner, Dr. Gail Burstein, talking, about the opioid epidemic in Erie County and Western New York, and exactly what is being done, what has been done to kind of correct things. We've fallen into a little bit of a spiral. I think a lot of doctors have said over the past few years with opioids, and not just heroin that we heard of originally, but some of the medicine that was prescribed, whether it be, as you mentioned, Lortabs or hydrocodone, a lot of these popular painkillers that we're now learning maybe should have been treated a little more delicately than they were. But a lot of people are wondering where the line is on that. It's easy for us to understand, say, looking at your wisdom teeth being pulled out. Do we really need X amount of weeks worth of opioid medication for that? A lot of people, though, saying, what about my chronic back pain? What about this? That I've been taking this medication for a long time. I don't consider myself an addict necessarily. What about my medication? Do we have to go this far? What are some of the schools of thought of prescribing this medicine now that we do know a little bit more?
Right. So that's a great question. We know that many times with opioid medication, you know, narcotic painkillers, that the risk can be greater than the benefits. So for an acute injury, say a sports injury, or if you had, say, some minor surgery or like a tooth extraction, that it's probably, if you can, use ibuprofen or Tylenol to treat the pain. And there have been some great studies, very well done studies published in the past few years that demonstrate that either ibuprofen alone or Tylenol alone or those in combination really control pain where we used to use narcotic pain medication, not just acute pain, but also like, you know, chronic pain of like joints and back. And so if we can, I mean, those should be the go-to medication for pain. You know, also having a different approach is it's not unrealistic to expect that your pain will completely resolve with any medication for a long period of time. We know that physiologically it's impossible for these narcotic pain medications to work to completely suppress the pain over the long run just because of your body's opioid receptors and your response to chronic medication, that it's not going to work. And so if somebody is prescribed medication for pain and the prescriber says, okay, you take these pills, you won't have any pain anymore, and then that's, you know, usually not going to happen. There's going to be some pain. So they'll return to their provider and they'll say, okay, well, I still have some pain. And so then they get a higher dose and a higher dose, mm-hmm. and that can spiral. Whereas if the approach is different, is okay, if you take this for a short period of time and your pain will decrease, it won't completely go away. And then here's some other things that you can do to help address the pain, to help address how you're functioning and really looking at the goal of functionality rather than pain. And there are, other non-pharmacologic tools that we can use, like acupuncture, physical therapy, and chronic behavioral therapy that have been shown to address pain. It's, you know, it's not as easy as popping a pill.
Right.
And it's we also know that it's much healthier and safer for people in the long run. So even with a prescription medication, people have a risk of overdosing. They could say take the wrong medication or take the wrong dose or forget that they took a dose earlier and then take another dose. So there's always the risk, even if somebody's been taking a medication for a long period of time.
We'll continue talking about this. 12 Voices in 12 Hours on WBEN. But first, a news update. We have Tom Puckett standing by. You're listening to 12 Voices in 12 Hours, a discussion on opioids on WBEN.
12 Voices in 12 Hours. This is a special community discussion on opioid prevention on News Radio 930 WBEN.
12:33 here on WBEN. Brian Mazurowski here with you as 12 Voices in 12 Hours continues. We're joined live in studio by Erie County's Health Commissioner, Dr. Gail Burstein, and talking about a whole host of different things because 12 hours, there's a reason for 12 hours because, you know, 1 hour just simply isn't enough to get to all the different topics revolving around this issue. But we've been talking a little bit about how prescribing pain medication has changed. You know, what schools of thought are now that we know a little bit more about opioids and their effect on the body. And you were mentioning before we had to take a break some of the things that parents and patients should know when looking at your options if you have some sort of pain. What about those people who are already on a program of taking prescribed opioid painkillers? Maybe they're listening today and thinking, well, are there other options for me? what other options are there?
Right. Well, many times there are other options to be able to slowly dial down the meds and at the same time increase other non-pharmacologic therapies. And looking at the goal of increasing functionality, not just addressing pain. And so looking at talking to your healthcare provider about options with acupuncture or physical therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy to help people, address like living with some pain. People do it and they can be very successful and decrease their risk of an overdose.
I want to be careful in how I say this, but it sounds the way this has kind of been described of how these pain prescriptions have been dealt out over the last decade or so, that we've become a bunch of wusses. But that's probably not necessarily the case, right? It's just that, you know, it's so much better to, well, seemingly, to take a pill. It'll be so much easier to get rid of a lot of that pain than deal with, a struggle of whether it's a long-term physical therapy or getting better through another way and dealing with that. I think it's kind of easy to see how doctors would have fallen into prescribing more and more of these medications because they do work.
Right, for a limited amount of time. And to be fair to prescribers is that healthcare, physicians and other prescribers and pharmacists were not really told about the addictive risks of these medications. The pharmaceutical companies, similar to the tobacco companies, really hid any information about those very dangerous adverse outcomes of addiction and really told prescribers that there was no risk. And there's documentation from old commercials and from old lectures that from these pharmaceutical company representatives that they're very adamantly claiming that there is no risk of addiction, that these are very safe medications, which we now know is not true. So it was a problem for the healthcare community because we didn't have all the facts. And so, again, if there's we're told that there's a pill, it's going to alleviate pain in the long term, and there's really no risk of taking this. I mean, why wouldn't we prescribe it? And so this has been actually going on for 20 years, and it's changed our culture. It's changed the expectations of pain, and now people expect having no pain, and that's really a new phenomenon. And these medications, originally were developed to treat for palliative care of people with, say, cancer or some type of end stage disease where they're suffering. They were never intended originally to use, chronically for pain for other people who were expected to live for years. And so I think we have to readjust and our expectations of living with pain and managing pain. I mean, nobody feels like 100% every day, all day. And we have to, go on and deal with that. And sometimes, people are challenged with a greater amount of pain. And there's many opportunities that to help treat this with non-pharmacologic strategies that take effort and they take thought and concentration. And it's not as easy as taking a pill, but it's much safer, especially for the long term.
I think for a lot of people who have been following this story as it's developed over the years, it's maybe changed the way they've looked at drug addiction. Even for some people who think that addiction is a choice, you are choosing to do this. If you look at it the way that we've now kind of been told of how some of these painkillers will lead to heroin use, it will lead to use of other drugs, maybe they're not making that choice because they're told to originally take this pill by a doctor.
Right. I mean, there was very little counseling about the risks of pain medication and the risks of overdoses and the risk of addiction. And people believe that these are safe medication. And then all of a sudden, they feel that they find that they can't stop taking it. We know the overwhelming majority of people who are become addicted to opioids, and including those who overdose, started their journey with a prescribed medication. And they, and unfortunately, we've become very good at listening to healthcare providers counseling of, you have to take all your medicine, even when you're feeling better, you can't stop taking your medicine, which is really a message for antibiotics, although that's changing too. And so people misunderstood that they're supposed to take this pain medication, even if it's just for, say, an acute injury or tooth extraction, until the bottle's finished, which really isn't true.
And even knowing some of this stuff, knowing that, okay, well, this might be addictive if you miss it. I think most people, even knowing that, will still look at a bottle of pills prescribed to them by a doctor and say, okay, if I take what it says on this bottle, I will be fine.
Right. They assume that it's safe because it was a prescription medication, which is not true. I mean, every single medicine has side effects. Most of the time we take them because of the good side effects, but every medication has good side effects and bad side effects. And sometimes the bad side effects are more powerful than the good side effects. And people don't, everybody has kind of a personal fable. They think that nothing bad is going to happen to them. I mean, that, that those bad things happen to other people. And so when they're given a prescription medication that, even though they may have heard like, oh, you can become addicted to it, they think like, oh, that's not going to happen to me. That only happens to other people that are weak or, have some other problem. And lo and behold, everybody is at risk. Some people are more at risk than others. Hopefully healthcare providers are screening for those risk factors before they prescribe. Addiction can also be a hereditary trait. I mean, and people can be, we know that people can get addicted to alcohol. People can get addicted to other drugs besides opioids and get addicted to gambling. And, so there is a hereditary trait. And so a good question that people should ask themselves, and hopefully their healthcare provider asks them before they prescribe medication, is, anybody in your family ever had a problem with alcoholism or other drug addiction or addiction to gambling? And ask the patient, have you ever had any type of addiction problems? Because then they're at higher risk than other people in the population. We also know that young age is a big risk factor for developing addiction from being exposed to narcotic pain medication. The brain is not fully developed until people are well into their 20s. And so during that time, it is very easy to form new pathways that end up being permanent. And so if a young person is exposed to an opioid from a prescribed medication, they're much more vulnerable to developing addiction compared to somebody that's older. And this has been shown in some very robust studies. There was a population-based study that was published in Pediatrics at the end of 2015, where they did a population-based survey, and they asked young people in their early 20s, have you ever used a prescribed pain medication? And then also asked them about their current use of either prescribed for them or however they take it, misuse of opioids. And they found that overall in the general population, there was an increased risk of people misusing narcotics and if they were given a narcotic pain medication during high school for a reasonable reason.
It's all kind of changed the face of this journey that you've described right there, changed how we look at addicts and heroin addiction too, because 10 years ago, you tell me, you picture in your mind a heroin addict, you're thinking, Johnny Thunders in the alley somewhere, lying on the street. You're not necessarily thinking suburban home. Do eyes still widen when, you kind of paint that picture for people? Are people still unaware of that fact?
Yeah, unfortunately, again, people think that It's, again, their personal fable that doesn't happen to people in my community. That only happens to other people. I mean, we really see, just as, you know, Glenn, looking at the tip of the iceberg, we see a very similar number, pretty much the same number of opioid-related overdose deaths in the suburb compared to the city. So it's, unfortunately, it's an equal opportunity killer.
We are talking with Dr. Gail Burstein, Erie County's health commissioner. Still a little bit to go here as 12 Voices in 12 Hours continues. Coming up at 1 o'clock, we'll be welcoming in a recovering addict, somebody who's went through the drug court program. Andrew is his name, and he'll be kind of talking about his journey beginning at 1 o'clock. It's a conversation I don't think you'll want to miss. But before that, still a little bit to go with Gail Burstein, Erie County's health commissioner. You can text in your questions, 3930, throughout the rest of the day. We'll be back after this on WBEN. 12 Voices in 12 Hours, continuing here on WBEN, looking at opioids. And our in-studio guest for the rest of this hour, Dr. Gail Burstein, Erie County Health Commissioner, and touched on a lot of different things. And treatment is one of the things that we keep coming back to for, you know, what are people looking at when they're looking for a treatment. And now we're shying away from prescribing some of these opioid medications. And you've been talking about some of the alternatives, some of the, you know, combining medication with other things.
Right. So that's primary prevention. So that's, you know, preventing the disease of addiction, because addiction is a disease, from happening by preventing people from getting exposed to something that can lead to the disease of addiction. So secondary prevention is actually people already have the disease of addiction. And so giving them medication to prevent bad outcomes of their disease. And so we know that from, again, like over many years, really great population-based data, that really the best long-term evidence-based treatment for opioid addiction is medication-assisted treatment with either methadone or buprenorphine. Usually it's available combined with naloxone as a product called Suboxone. People may be more familiar with it, is Suboxone. And that's a prescription medication that people can go see a healthcare provider who's certified to prescribe Suboxone and get that medication, so they don't have to go to a clinic every day like they do with methadone. They have to go to a clinic to receive directly observed therapy. Those are both those medications are not expensive, and we know that they're cost effective and they're very effective. Because the problem is with opioid addiction is that people have many, many opioid receptors, and if they're empty, the opioid receptors are not happy, and so they trigger these cravings and terrible withdrawal, where people feel awful. They feel like they have the flu, that in they feel like they might die, and so by the time someone becomes addicted to opioids, they're craving medications not to get a high, because they'll never get a high again, because they've lost that tolerance, and they're really craving to escape the feelings of withdrawal. And so they need something in their opioid receptors to feel well and to be able to, you know, function in society. And so either methadone or Suboxone, which actually isn't a true opioid, it's a partial opioid. So it looks like an opioid to your opioid receptors, so they're happy if they have that drug in them, but it's not a true opioid, so it's difficult to overdose and difficult to get high. And so you're treating the person with this medication-assisted treatment, and that many times also people would benefit from counseling. Some people don't want counseling, and that's okay. It's really about, you know, keeping them alive and functional. But ideally, it would the medication-assisted treatment involves the medication and some counseling to help people, you know, deal with these triggers struggle with their cravings and be able to resume normal lives. lives and develop kind of different social networks and different behavioral patterns to be able to become, you know, parents again and child, part family members again, and students and employees, and return to normal society. And it's not like many people have this myth that you're just, you know, substituting one addiction for another, but it's really, this is a chronic disease and it requires chronic medication, just like insulin dependent diabetes or COPD or hypertension. I mean, those require chronic medications for people to be well, and so do people with opioid addiction.
Do you think we'll ever get to I guess a point of understanding on that, though? Because for so many people, thinking about addiction is so different from thinking about something like diabetes, and obviously then the treatment, they're going to picture different in those two cases, but you're describing them as similar.
Right. I mean, they're both chronic diseases. So we have more information now. I mean, since this has become such a widespread epidemic, that we have done a lot of research about the disease of addiction and realize it is just another chronic disease. Like it's similar to say, like with HIV. I mean, people had a lot of false beliefs about HIV with, you know, transmission and treatment. And now I think the community understands that a little bit better too. So I hope that people will, you know, approach opioid addiction in a sympathetic, non-judgmental, and compassionate fashion, and realize that it's just another disease that people might struggle with. Often it's caused by taking a legitimate prescribed pain medication that led to an unfortunate, unanticipated consequence.
And that's how, as you've said before, a lot of this starts, especially looking at heroin now. I'm trying to think of the last time I heard a number on this, or somebody put a number on it, but a vast majority now of heroin users started with some sort of pill that was originally in a prescription bottle.
Right, almost all. I mean, over 80% has really started by taking a prescribed medication, a legitimate pain medication. So it's nobody chooses to be addicted. I mean, it's a terrible life. And so that's why we really have to help people feel well again with medication-assisted treatment. And, you know, instead of trying to hide these clinics, they should be in the center of town, advertised, come here, feel better, we can help you. Just like we do, unfortunately, these some chronic pain clinics or, you know, other clinics that are, you know, advertising for patients. I mean, this is something that is really helping people a great deal.
As part of your role, health commissioner, you're kind of in the middle of all this, especially talking about these task forces going on in Erie County. Looking at how, whether it's healthcare providers, different hospital systems, different doctors, how they've had to work together on this. How has that gone? Was there maybe, you know, a little bit of teeth pulling at first, trying to get some of these different organizations who are competitors in the field to work together?
I think that when we really presented the problem in an objective manner and showed, supported by good data that we have from our medical examiner's office and from our first responders that were reporting their naloxone saves, the medical community realized that this was a problem and that they had to lay down their sabers and work together. And so we have our competing hospital systems, you know, Kaleida and Catholic Health have been working together on this problem, all the competing physician networks, all the competing health plans. I mean, we've all come together and worked on this problem because we realize it's a problem of the community and not just a specific, you know, patient populations or health plan members. It's really our entire community. And I've just really been, you know, so thrilled, and I really admire our healthcare community for owning this problem and stepping up and working together to contribute and even in investing a lot of resources, including money, to address this problem.
And more work to be done, I'm sure, for you and everybody else you're working with. That's Dr. Gail Burstein, Erie County's health commissioner. She's been our in-studio guest for the last hour. It's 12 Voices in 12 hours continues. Now, coming up a little bit after the break, we'll have, of course, your news, top stories coming up in just a moment. But then we'll hear from our own Tom Puckett, who will be in studio with Andrew. Somebody wants to share their story of going through recovery, what addiction is like from his perspective, and then working his way through the court system, recovery, and then his way back into where he is right now. I think it's a story you probably won't want to miss, and that's coming up after the news, which will be with our Mike Bangerman. Again, it's 12 Voices in 12 Hours, a focus on opioids. If you missed any of our discussions, you can hear them hour by hour on demand at WBEN.com. That's the place to go. Gail, thank you so much for being in here the last hour.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
All right. And again, if you missed any with Dr. Gail Burstein, available on demand at WBEN.com. If you're tuning in to hear Rush Limbaugh, that's available also at WBEN.com, streaming there. I'm Brian Masurowski, and it is just about 1 o'clock.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.